LSU, perfect on the road in SEC hoops play thanks to another, and I mean another, nail-biting overtime win. Then Yahoo Sports comes out with more news concerning Will Wade. Details to come. LSU baseball bounces back, and Coach O begins another spring practice today, Thursday, March 7th, 2019.
Morris, inbound, safely to Gordon Hayward. Hayward, half court, 6 seconds to go. Hayward, left-hand dribble drive, gets near the cup, hangs in the air. First shot is good. 2 seconds to go.
LeBron down the middle, to the rim, lays it up, in and a foul, and there it is. LeBron James with that basket, an and one, has moved past Michael Jordan into fourth place on the NBA's all-time scoring list, 32,294.
Reed, double team, skip pass, over to Waters, three ball, yes! Tremont Waters makes it 77-72 LSU. He now has 19.
Big shot by Tremont, but a nice feed, nice patient feed out of the double team by Nas Reed on the cross-court pass.
That lead would evaporate. It would go to overtime, and LSU would find a way to sort out yet another win, 79-78 over the Florida Gators to improve to 25-5 overall, 15-2 in conference play. One more game to go this Saturday when the Vanderbilt Commodores come to town, and LSU's on the precipice of an SEC regular season championship. Good afternoon and welcome. Live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing, you've dialed up the Jordy Helper Show. My main man, CD, back in the master control suite, spinning the tunes, pushing all the buttons right there on the campus of Delta Media and KLWB, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. You can call us at 337-706-0111. Email me, askjordy@gmail.com. Hell of a night of basketball for LSU. Tremont Waters goes coast to coast to tie the ball game up. LSU figures out a way to get it done. The unsung hero, Emmett Williams, 13 points, 14 rebounds in 27 minutes of play. LSU out-rebounded Florida as well they should, 46-36. They got on the offensive glass, 20 offensive rebounds to get a commanding 44-26 points in the paints, points in the paint statistical category lead, and a 20-8 advantage on second chance points. This team figures out a way. They're far from perfect, but they figure out a way, and they've been perfect on the road in SEC play, 9-0, something no other LSU basketball team has done. So congratulations to the Tigers. And then today, not very long ago, Will Wade was at his monthly luncheon at L'Auberge in Baton Rouge. And about 20 minutes before he got there, he learned of a new Yahoo Sports report that says the headlines, Wiretap reveals LSU coach Will Wade discussed recruiting offer with hoops scandal middleman. I just read the article. Will Wade has yet to read the article. He probably has by now. Hasn't said anything about it. Says, I don't know what to say. I haven't read it. But we'll handle it the right way as we have handled everything. There's always two sides to every story. But this is something. This is something on a wiretap intercepted by the FBI between Will Wade and basketball middleman Christian Dawkins. that features Coach Wade speaking freely about a, quote, strong-ass offer he made in the recruitment of a prospect. And later on in the program, I will discuss and read all of this to you, exactly how the report went. This is not fun. This is not good. But I am not calling anyone out until everything comes out. And we'll see how what Will Wade has to say. We'll see what LSU has to say. So far, everyone is declining comment on this. But it certainly seems to appear to be involving Javonte Smart in this situation. According to the report from Yahoo Sports, on part of the call, Coach Wade expresses frustration. I'm just reading this directly to you. Wade expresses frustration that a third party affiliated with the recruitment had yet to accept Wade's, quote, offer, unquote. Instead, a verbal commitment to LSU was being delayed because Wade theorized he had not given the third party a big, quote, enough piece of the pie in the deal, close quote, and instead, quote, tilted, close quote, the offer toward the player and his mother. According to this FBI and Yahoo source report, quoting Will Wade, I was thinking last night on this Smart thing, I'll be honest with you, I'm blank tired of dealing with the thing. Like I'm just blank sick of dealing with the blank. Like this should not be that blanking complicated. And there's no elaboration on what the Smart thing is. We know who Javonte Smart is. And we know about these previous wiretaps. They talked about Will Wade talking to Dawkins about another player. These three calls with a cell phone number belonging to LSU coach Will Wade, each of which occurred between June 19th, 2017, June 30th, 2017. Smart announced his commitment to LSU via Twitter on June 30th of 2017. And we'll have much more on this. This is never good. This is never fun. And we'll find out more as the parties that are involved speak. And we'll be able to determine from there. But until then, you've got Yahoo with their sources and their report, and you have LSU very quiet at this point in time until they delve into this. Will Wade was asked if this is going to be a distraction. He did say, no, we've been through a heck of a lot this year. Of course, we all know about the loss of Wade Sims, and this is nothing new, but this is more possible damning evidence in this. There is no NCAA investigation, and the FBI is not investigating Will Wade. They're just investigating the corruption, the wide, well-known corruption of college basketball. And we'll have much more on this later on in the program. But we start the show off next, happier things. LSU, one win away from clinching an SEC regular season championship. Cody Worsham, we'll talk about that and this incredible LSU hoops team next.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
All right, welcome back. Let's talk some basketball because LSU did it again. Another overtime thriller, another overtime win on the road, 79-78. As we mentioned before, over the Florida Gators, they're now 25-5 overall, 15-2 in the SEC with one game left. That's the home senior night finale against the Vanderbilt Commodores. Cody Worsham, LSU's digital media director and a fellow hoopnik, kind enough to join us. It's amazing, Cody, to go on the road and win every time you play in the league. It's never been done before. That's just remarkable. It says an awful lot about this team. And again, everybody plays their part. And Emmett Williams played the best game of his career at a critical time. Buddy, how are you?
I'm good, Jordy. Yeah, Emmett was awesome last night. You know, I had actually talked about it on the podcast before the game, someone had asked me, are you worried about Emmett? I said, I'm not worried about Emmett. I think if he stays out of foul trouble, he brings it every night. He's going to have a big game here soon. I just really appreciate Emmett for making me look good and getting my prediction right. he played great. He was awesome. And yeah, this team is – the way that they've been on the road is just incredible.
They get a lead. They have a dry spell to end the first half. They fall behind. They battle back. I guess the one thing, the two glaring statistics that stand out to me, 44-26 points in the paint advantage and a 20-8 second chance points advantage. LSU utilized their health, their height, their aggressiveness, their depth off the bench to just get it done against Florida.
Yeah, that's what they do, especially on the road. You know, Bill Wade's talked a lot about that this year. Their formula for winning on the road is it's tough to go win games on the road as a jump shooting team. You just don't shoot as well away from home. You're not as comfortable. Sight lines are a little bit different. But things that do travel are exactly that, attacking the rim, getting in the paint, finishing at the rim, getting second-chance points, offensive rebounds, and cleaning up on the other end as well. And LSU's good at that. So, you know, I'd love to play guard on this team where you can just kind of get in the paint and get a shot up. You make it, you get points, and if not, you know, your big guys are going to go get it. You're not going to get chewed out on the sidelines. So it certainly makes life easier on LSU's guards, and those guys are really good players. But those bigs, eating up offensive rebounds and getting paint points, it makes a huge difference.
I remember a while back you talked about talking to Will Wade about traveling on the road and how he that was one of his major areas of concern heading into the season. So he went and studied. He did some homework. He traveled and he asked other people who those other people are. I have no clue. It doesn't matter to me. But whatever he learned has certainly worked. And he talked about it's just the same old routine, right? And it's less physical, more mental on the road. Is that kind of sum it up?
Yeah, so last season, basically Will Wade used the same road routine with LSU that he had used at BCU and Chattanooga and been pretty successful with. And I don't know the exact details of that. I mean, it's kind of like asking a coach what his practice plans are. That's kind of information that they're going to keep to themselves,
right?
Because they work so hard on it. But they whatever that routine was, it didn't work for LSU last year the same way. I think they won, their first three road games and then lost their last seven or eight, and then there's some neutral site games that they lost as well. So they just didn't have any success when they were traveling. And so every May, Will Wade hits the road, and he goes and visits other coaches and authors and thought leaders, and he's got a couple of specific things in mind after each season. Last season, it was how to do better on the road, how to perform better away from home. And I don't know where he went. I don't know exactly what he learned, but it obviously worked. They certainly changed some things this year. They did. They got the players off their feet a little bit more in road environments and did more mental work, more paper scouts, more film work, and try to keep them a little bit fresher. And that certainly worked because the last 10 minutes of road games, they've been absolutely dominating teams. I think they've outscored about like 60 or 70 points this year on the road in the last 10 minutes of games. So when you do that, you're gonna win a lot of them, as this team has proven.
I've got a funny feeling that coaches are going to start calling Will Wade and starting to visit him to learn his secrets on the road, because it's unheard of. No other LSU team has ever done it. I was a part of one that was undefeated until the last road trip at Kentucky, and we got beat at the wire by the Wildcats. So it's very, very, very difficult to do. What did you think of Tremont Smart last night? How about that? How about that last second length of the court dribble drive? Just fearless.
Yeah, Trey he's had a couple looks at the end of some games this year that haven't gone down. I think most of them have been situations where LSU ended up going into overtime after his shots rimmed out. But I thought that was him at his best. You know, someone actually texted me a video last night of Tyus Edney in 1995, the NCAA tournament, where he did a very similar coast-to-coast drive for UCLA. It's funny that Tyus Edney's daughter, Kennedy Edney, is now an LSU gymnast. That's a funny coincidence, but it was very similar. You know, he just got it out of the net. I think Skylar Mays actually got the original inbounds. Skylar gave it right up to Tremont, and they said, all right, let's go full speed ahead. And once he gets a full steam of speed going ahead, you can't stop him. And then the finish was great. He got from the left side of the goal to the right side, so he couldn't get blocked. spun it in. And just another huge play in a season that's been full of huge plays.
One game left to go, Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt just got humbled by Arkansas. But I got to ask you about the elephant in the room that just came down with the Yahoo Sports and the apparently a 2017, according to their sources, a phone conversation intercepted by the FBI between Will Wade and that basketball middleman, Christian Dawkins, that according to Yahoo Sports, features Wade kind of speaking freely about a strong offer he made in the recruitment of a prospect. Will Wade spoke today at his monthly luncheon at LaBerge. Did he have anything to say about this thing?
Yeah, so essentially I think the story came out either as Will Wade was talking at the luncheon or maybe just before. And so when he was asked about it after, he said he hadn't read the story yet. Okay. He wasn't going to give any comment. There was a couple of follow-up questions. He said he wasn't going to give any comment. So he hadn't really said much about it. I think the only thing that he really said about it was he was asked if it was going to be a distraction. And he said, look, this team has been through a ton of adversity this offseason. We've gotten very, very good at blocking out external noise. So I don't think it'll be a distraction to the team. They've been really, really good about dealing with things that are far more serious than reports, having lost a teammate earlier in the season. They know how to get through tough times. So and this isn't even anywhere close to that scale. So that's basically all he said about that.
Okay, we'll leave it at that, and time will tell on all this stuff. But in the here and now, is LSU, have they played their best basketball yet, or is there still room to climb?
They've played their best basketball in spurts, Jordy. I don't know how many times they've done it for 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the intriguing thing about this team, if they can put it together for 40 minutes, and that's not to disparage any of the games they played. I mean, the wins over Kentucky and Tennessee, you certainly have to play for 40 minutes. But even in those games, they had stretches where they made mistakes and could have played better. So, I don't think they played their best for 40 minutes. You've seen it at times. You saw it last night when they were down, 8 and then made a 10-0 run, from the 6-minute mark to about the 4-minute mark. They've been at their best in these, 6-minute games where they're, down and make these comebacks. But I don't think we've seen it for a full game. So I'm really intrigued to see if at some point this team does put together one of those games wire to wire and just kind of, plays as well as they can play, where they combine everything. They do the offensive rebounding. They take care of the basketball. They shoot it better from three. If they can kind of do all of those things at once, I mean, this could be a really scary basketball team for a lot of teams in March.
It's really amazing how you see Florida knock down three after three after three, but in my mind, I'm watching going, they're still in this game. We're still in this game. I don't care. It's 4 possessions right now, 3 possessions, 6 minutes to go. They're right in it. They'll figure something out. And you can't say that about a lot of teams. It is uncanny how they handle the pressure down the stretch, and they just seem to make the right play. But, golly, I was happy for Emmett Williams. He was so good last night. So good.
Yeah, that's what Emmett does. He makes his living. He butters his bread off of putbacks and offensive rebounds and effort and energy. And, I've said it before, but at times, if he stays out of foul trouble and he just stays on the floor, he's going to have that kind of impact. Yeah, he's going to make a mistake defensively. He's going to make a freshman mistake on a rotation or something. But he's also going to make up for that with 6 offensive rebounds, 7 offensive rebounds. He's going to make a seal on the inside that maybe nobody notices, but opens up a wide-open driving lane for a guard, or opens up a wide open 3-pointer for Skylar Mays in the corner like he did last night. I mean, he just does so many things that go unnoticed, in addition to the things that go noticed: the offensive rebounds, the putbacks, the running the floor. And he's just got this edge and this energy and this passion that other players just aren't able to match. So it's fun to see. I mean, I love him. He's so much fun to cover. He's so much fun to watch.
Yeah.
It was great to see him back in his home state doing exactly what he does best.
13 points, 14 rebounds, 7 of them offensive in 27 minutes of play. Everybody always asks me about that other LSU basketball team from way back when that was 17-0 in league play and lost the last game at Kentucky. The only thing I tell people about that team that went to the Final Four is that wasn't their first time at the dance. They'd had two prior years where they were a number 3 seed in the NCAA tournament, a number 1 seed, and then again another number 1 seed. and they had cut their teeth in postseason play. This team doesn't have anybody yet that's played in an NCAA tournament game. So I always tell people, look, this is a different time. This is a different era. The rules are different. There was no three-point line. There was no shot clock back when we played. There is now, but we just have to look to see what this team does and how they handle the pressure that is the NCAA tournament. And until we do that, you can't compare one against the other. This is a really, really good team, one of the best offensive rebounding teams I've ever seen.
Yeah, I think one, you know, Cavell Bigby-Williams is the only guy that's got some tournament experience. He got it with Oregon, and they actually made a Final Four, so yeah. Maybe that's a little bit of a boost there. But I do think it's a different day and age because so many teams you're playing against have the same shortage of experience just because the turnover is so quick in college basketball these days. So I think it mattered a lot more back then than it does now, but I don't think it's it counts for nothing. I do think at some point I'll come up against an experienced team. And they're certainly going to have to figure out a way to negate the experience that those teams have with their own qualities, which you mentioned, the offensive rebounding, the athleticism, the playmaking in the backcourt. Those are the things that LSU is going to have to lean on. And I think Will Wade's done a really good job of getting his team to lean on those things in tough moments because they certainly don't play like an inexperienced team. They are by the numbers, they just aren't psychologically in their makeup.
That's a great point. Great backcourt, rebound the basketball. They defend when they need to, and they knock down free throws. That's a team that can go a long, long way in the tournament. But, man, I appreciate the time. I know you're busy. I mean, heck, basketball, spring football, LSU baseball. I mean, you never stop. But I appreciate you stopping by for us, as you always do. Greatly appreciate it. What a fun basketball season. Finally, right? Finally.
Yeah, let's just keep winning and see how far these Tigers can go because it's fun to watch them go out there and compete every night.
All right, buddy. Take care. Cody Worsham, LSU's digital media director, kind enough to join us. We'll talk with a former player, Rudy Macklin, about this team, this coach, and we'll draw comparisons to that Final Four team back in 80-81. Still to this day, 31 wins. 31 wins. If LSU gets to 31 this year, They'll be in the hunt, I promise you. We'll be back. Spring football report or look into with Brooks Cabina next here on the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Helfrich Show on 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the app.
And we are back. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show. Tennessee beats LSU in the SEC Women's Tournament today, 69-66. In my opinion, ending LSU women's basketball season. No tournament bid for them. But while that comes to an end, spring football starts anew as LSU hits the Ponderosa today for the start of the first of 15 total practices. Brooks Cabina covers the LSU Tigers for The Advocate. He's joining us now to kind of give us a preview of what he expects, what he's looking forward to seeing in what I believe could be a banner season for LSU. Brooks, good day, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Jordy. How about yourself?
I'm terrific. Thank you very much. I think that all along, Ed Orgeron and staff were earmarked for this season. I don't know what they expected a year ago, having a new quarterback that came in so late, but now they know what they have there. They end up by winning their Fiesta Bowl with a victory in that one, and now hope springs eternal. So with that in mind, what's the most prevalent thing that you're looking forward to seeing this spring?
Well, I mean, the most prevalent thing is checking on what kind of things happened in the replacement of Devin White. Actually, it kind of goes along with some news that happened very recently. LSU announced that Grant Delpit, the unanimous All-American from last year at strong safety, will be wearing number 7 going into next season. So that's kind of the guy that you want to see. And if he becomes a leader on the defense, that comes along with that the prestige of wearing that jersey. So that's one thing to look through in the spring, but mostly the holes on the team are not as much lesser. You brought that up with the quarterback. That's settled. But a lot of the questions circle around the offensive line. What are things going to look like on the guards and tackles? Lloyd Cushenberry looked good at center. It seems like that's going to be pretty solid. But, you know, is Sadiq Charles going to stick at left tackle? Is Austin Deckers going to stick at right? I mean, the sack numbers were ranked 106th, I believe, tied in last year. They give up 35 throughout the year. So are they going to improve? Who's going to replace Garrett Brumfield at left guard? And, you know, the only person on the right guard side, Damian Lewis, had a good season last year, so that'll be there. But, you know, there's that offensive line is one of the biggest things that are going into this spring, because that's what Ogeron talked about a lot, and being able to handle top defensive lines like Alabama.
8 offensive starters return, 8 defensive starters return. Some people look at that as a good thing. Well, it just kind of depends, right? I mean, hopefully some newcomers come in there. You want to get better at each and every position. So offensive line is prevalent. There's a lot of newcomers on the defensive line, and there's a kid from up in the Crowley area, the Tyler Shelvin. It looks like the door is wide open for him to maybe finally live up to the expectations that he had coming out of high school.
Yeah, he had big expectations. And last year, right before the season began, Ed Ogeron said he reminded him of many good defensive tackles he's coached before. So he had that going in, and, you know, mainly he compared him to Glenn Dorsey, so that set it really high. But never really saw him go through at the very beginning of the season. The last two games, whenever, he had a chance against Texas A&M and UCF, he produced 1.5 sacks and a tackle for a loss there. I mean, he played pretty well, but his problem has always been getting his weight down to be able to play. That's something Ogeron said a lot during the season. But he's going to have a chance to compete at nose tackle, and it's going to be a competition. They brought in another big guy, Siaki Ika from Utah. He's going to be up there at nose tackle. And Braden Fajoko, if you guys have been paying attention to some of the LSU football tweets that have come out from their workouts, it looks like he's gotten pretty strong in some of their videos. So there's going to be good competition at that nose tackle position. And that's going to be the focus of, you know, that physicality that they'd had up front that Ogeron wants and has been seeking for the past couple of years.
Brooks Cabina, the Baton Rouge Advocate. LSU spring practice starts today. The next practice will be on Saturday. I know we talk about positions. I'm telling you, we're going to find out just how much Cole Tracy meant to this team. He was terrific a year ago. Boy, those are big shoes to fill. He was a record-setting place kicker. Where are they going with this?
Well, I mean, you know, you had the two guys from last year that, you know, had brought 50% on kicking, and that's what led them to Cole Tracy. The main guy that you're looking for is Cade York, who's coming out of Texas. He kicked a 59-yarder in the All-American game for high school.
That's right. He's not getting here until June.
So, you know, you still got people in camp that are probably going to be there. So you want to see how they play, how it goes. But really, everything's kind of pointing toward the high school kicker that's coming in.
Continuity on the staff. A year ago, they had a whole bunch of changes. This year, not many. Of course, we all want to know about how the new passing game coordinator is going to mesh with Steve Ensminger. That's a dynamic with Joe Brady that I'm kind of curious to see what unfolds here. How much we'll see in the springtime, who knows? But what unfolds along those lines?
Yeah, that'll be interesting. I don't know how much, as a media person, I'm going to see out there, because they only let us see individual drills. So those RPO tendencies that are going to be played in won't really be available until some of those scrimmages, and I doubt we'll see much of those until the spring game occurs. But in practice, that does bring up something interesting, because, you know, whenever Sullivan was here last year, he was working with wide receivers. He had a bevy of knowledge from his time in the NFL. He showed them how to work on steps and to their routes. You know, that's something that Jerry was very good at. Is Joe Brady that? No, he doesn't have that same kind of background. So I'm interested to see what he's going to do on the field in practice. Does that mean Mickey Joseph has more of an interaction with the wide receivers now in practice? And what exactly is Joe Brady's role? Is he going to coach up tight ends? Is he going to do whatever? I mean, they'll have a place for him, obviously, but it will be a change, and, you know, we'll see how the coaching staff handles that change without one of the greater wide receiver coaches in football.
Excuse my ignorance, but these analysts that come along, are they allowed at spring practice to be on the field? They're not. Okay.
No, analysts are strictly allowed to work on film and film alone and things. They cannot have any direct contact with any players. So it's nicknamed the shadow staff for that reason. I mean, you bring in people to help analyze and prepare game plans and things like that. So, no, all the recent guys that have been hired, can't have any contact. They won't be there at practice.
Brooks Cabino, the Baton Rouge Advocate. You mentioned Devin White earlier trying to fill his position. Spring practice is all about finding out what players can do. Devin White came as a running back, but LSU saw a void, and Dave Aranda went and said, why don't you come play linebacker? I'll coach you up, and the rest is history. Do you see anything along the lines of maybe a player changing a spot or two, and it might stick?
Nothing sticks out immediately. What we were thinking throughout last season, to keep watching through, was where were they going to place Jontre Kirkland, a guy who came out as from Lutcher High as an outstanding quarterback, and then switched over to cornerback, and then they flipped him to wide receiver and tried to run him out of the Wildcat formation. That didn't really go well. He fumbled it on his first try. But where is he going to fit into this? There's some spots out there that it seemed like the guys that they brought in, they're really confident in them playing where they're at. I mean, he won't be here in camp, but it's there's a lot of guys that Anthony Bradford. You've seen him listed as a guard in some places. He's expected to play right tackle. It's not a major shift, but it's somewhere where they have him pegged somewhere else than other recruiting sites have placed him, but. The rest, the people that you'll see in camp, a guy like Derek Stingley will be playing corner. Siaki Ika will be playing nose tackle. So not too many changes from what you'll see in the spring.
Okay. We talk about the quarterback position in Joe Burrow. I'm curious to see what kind of progression Miles Brennan has made. They said it was so close, it was like a wire-to-wire finish, and they had to go to the video to see if that Joe Burrow won by a nose. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but that's what they said. I'm kind of curious as to the development of Miles Brennan.
I think whenever you watched Miles Brennan against Rice, you saw his development. He was, he was making some good throws, but I think the gap was a little wider than it was said. He was out for a long period of time in that beginning of the season because he had, an injury that, hindered his throwing. So maybe that evolved into some of the way that he played in that game. But, that'll definitely be something that they'll want to see progression from him because, that was something that they had to think of throughout of last season. When Joe Burrow wasn't allowed to run as often as he could, it was because they only had two scholarship quarterbacks. And is Brennan's ability going to be good enough for them to risk maybe putting Burrow into more danger? So, it will definitely be something to look at. And I think the main thing to see with his progression is what's Brennan's accuracy like. They know he's got some arm to him. Does he fill out? How's he been working out in the past offseason? Because he was tall and lanky. Is he built? Right. Can he sustain the hits in the SEC? So those will be progressions that you'll see, and we'll definitely look for throughout the spring.
Brooks Cabino, Baton Rouge Advocate. Fall practice underway later on today, and I guess the other story is LSU was just beaten up by injuries, and five players suffered season-ending injuries. I've seen videos of Caleb on Chase on. He looks good. I wonder how much they're going to use him. You mentioned Braden Fajoco. Christian Fulton had an ankle. Thaddeus Moss with a foot. Jamal Pettigrew with an ACL. Are some of these players going to be returning? And I can't imagine they go full go during spring. Do you?
Well, that'll be the interesting thing about today, seeing who's all out there. Another one, that Rashard Lawrence, he won't be out there. He's going to be out for the spring, but they're getting surgery on his right knee. Chasen Hines is another one. He posted a picture on Twitter post-surgery right around the bowl game, and who knows if he's going to be back. So, a lot of these things, I would expect that a guy like Caleb Vaughn to be out there. He was ready and running about in some of those at Texas A&M and things like that. But whether it's worth putting him through that kind of strain throughout the spring, maybe they do hold him out. But a guy like you mentioned Jamal Pettigrew, he tore his ACL last summer, so there was talk that he might have been able to play in the bowl game. So I would expect him to be much farther along than where Caleb's at. So he should probably be practicing out there, especially since Steve Ensminger has been wanting to run tight end sets all for the past 8 months. So he's probably going to be ready to go, and they'll need him if they want to start installing some of those offensive schemes they weren't able to yet.
Whereas last year most reporters went to the to see Joe Burrow and what he could do, I would imagine when the gates open, there'll be a rush to see what Derek Stingley can do, the nation's number one cornerback, who had a rare opportunity. He got to practice with the team prior to their bowl game. He's got a leg up on everybody else.
Yeah, well, this is one of those players where the hype hasn't come from the media. It's come from the coaches themselves, who said he looked like the best one out there. So that's the expectation that people are going to have, to see if he can actually be the starter opposite Christian Fulton next year, because that's the spot. That's one of those that's going to be a competitive deal where who's going to replace Greedy Williams end, and is Stingley good enough to do that? Because, there's guys still there. Like Kerry Vincent has been a good nickel safety, and they probably want to keep him there. But if the progression's not there, that opens it up between him and Kelvin Joseph, who's played at corner a little bit, but he was recruited as a safety as well. So Stingley is expected to compete for that job, but he'll have to probably progress and show that ability in order to hold on to that spot. It's a very important one. That's why they brought him in.
Yeah, and I'm also curious with the running back position. I'm sure Clyde Edwards-Helaire wants the job, and he is right now the incumbent heading into spring practice, but you got a couple of guys coming in. Plus, I would imagine Chris Curry's kind of chomping at the bit, as is Tay Provins, but John Emery and Tyrion Davis-Price, it looks to me on paper that the running back position is going to be a lot better this season than it was last season.
I wouldn't discount last season as much. Percent was very effective in key games. In Miami, he had the large 49-yard touchdown, and he was a sustainable back, ran for 1,000 yards, 14 touchdowns. He produced as a running back. It wasn't Leonard Fournette, but, it's hardly ever a guy you're going to get like that. But I do think it'll be interesting to see what Clyde Edwards-Helaire does in this spring, because he showed signs of being a very versatile back last year. He could cut. He could be that elusive guy, and he looked very good. I mean, he kind of is in that vein of someone who might run like Darius Geis, who's a very hard runner. Clyde is also kind of short and compact, and he can get out of a lot of tackles. He called himself a scat back last year, and there were many times where he proved that wrong just by being able to break out of tackles. But you mentioned Chris Curry. That's a big one too, because despite the number of carries he got last year, which were I think maybe five or so, the coaches were very vocal about his ability, Ogeron included. Like they like his power, they like his strength. If that's going to be something that plays out throughout this spring, he can find himself a role in next year's team, because I'm not with John Emery. He's got some breakaway speed. He's got power. Clyde's got his own skills, and Chris would provide that kind of power in short yardage situations that would give himself a spot to play, even if he's not a starter. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of progression he has. As far as Tay Provins, we haven't seen much from him yet, but we can't discount it either.
Yeah, options. It's always good to have options. It all gets underway later on. The media will be allowed access at around 4:30, and then Coach O will talk after practice. So we look forward to your reports in theadvocate.com. As always, Brooks, thank you so much for your time, man. Have a good one.
Hey, you too, Jordy. Thanks for having me on.
All right, take care. Brooks Cabina, the Baton Rouge Advocate. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back with more. My thoughts on this Yahoo report involving Will Wade next.
There's only one place. place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Helfer Show on 103.7 The Game.
Minutes after the hour. Welcome back. This is the Jordy Helfer Show, brought to you in part by DC's Little Capital X on I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge. Everything for your travel needs. DC's Little Capital X on I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge. Of course, the big story of the day is this Yahoo Sports report saying that they have a 2017 phone conversation intercepted by the FBI between Will Wade and basketball middleman Christian Dawkins that features Wade speaking freely about a strong-ass offer he made in the recruitment of a prospect. That prospect believed to be Javonte Smart. Look, what do you get out of it? Was a hell of an offer. A hell of an offer. That could mean a great scholarship. That could mean a great chance to get all the tutorial help you need in order to help you graduate. There was nothing ever said about what the offer was. The tape does not reference any specifics about the offer. If the particulars of the offer violated NCAA rules, if the player and or his mother ever knew of the offer, or if anyone accepted whatever the offer was. And it doesn't appear from this part of the call that Mr. Dawkins had any knowledge of what Will Wade is describing. So an offer is an offer. And I'm not going to fall into the trap of thinking, well, it's money, it's a car, it's a new house, it's this, that, or the other. There's enough people out there that believe all that. So you can believe what you want. I'm just going to wait and see. An offer is an offer. You offer someone a scholarship. Now, if Will Wade offered more than that, okay, that will all come out in the wash. That will all come out in the wash. But again, no reference as to what an offer. It's like, it's not like he said, man, I've made a heck of an offer. I offered him $100,000. Well, that's a whole different story. But an offer is an offer, and you can read between it whatever you decide to read into it. I'm sure that Will Wade and Joe Oliva and his personal attorney and LSU's attorneys are all talking, and they're going to try and get to the crux of this matter. And it's hard at this time of the season with so much at stake. Now, no one has commented on this at all. So how can we suppose anything other than what we're reading here? Now, you can let your mind wander and you can suppose whatever you want to suppose. Now, the tape does suggest that the FBI possesses additional evidence and phone conversations that could be entered into evidence in the second trial, which is slated to begin April 22nd in New York. And Will Wade will be subpoenaed, and if he goes to New York and he testifies at that trial under oath, well, the specifics in the recruiting conversations will come to light. So let's sit back and wait. An offer could be anything. It could be a scholarship. That's what they offer. Just wait, relax, and let's see. That will all come into light sooner rather than later. Hour number one is history. Hour number two, straight ahead. This is the Jordy Helfert Show, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pulled off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037thegame on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
It's hour number two of two on a Thursday, March the 7th. Daylight savings time coming up when you go to bed Saturday night or Sunday night, excuse me. So be ready for that and be ready for a good second hour of the program. Congrats to the Raging Cajuns for winning a baseball game last night, 16-10 over McNeese. LSU baseball bounces back with a win over Holy Cross. And now they get ready for Cal coming to town with one of the best hitters in baseball, Andrew Vaughn. He has been virtually unstoppable. So we'll see what this LSU pitching staff can do about that. But much more on that. LSU basketball wins again, 9-0 on the road, 15-2 in league play. They'll close out the regular season Saturday. Vanderbilt comes to town, a team that has yet to win a game in league play. LSU certainly doesn't want to fall to them. LSU's ruined a lot of senior days this season, and they certainly don't want their senior night to be ruined either. LSU women's basketball loses today 69-66. You heard it right here on 103.7 The Game in the SEC Women's Tournament. Nikki Fargus's club done for the season. They can hope and wish and pray all they want. They're not getting into the NCAA tournament. So that's some of your headlines. And, of course, we touched upon the Yahoo Sports scenario talking about Will Wade and some more evidence, according to some phone conversations, of talking about a recruit to a middleman, this, that, and the other. We shared our thoughts on that. I'm sure we'll have more thoughts to come as more information is revealed. But without further ado, busy second hour plan, and we get it started each and every day at this time of day with our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, hit that button, big guy.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
All right, CD, how are you today, my friend?
I am doing pretty darn good, Jordy, on a Thursday afternoon, because we had a lot of good things happen last night, namely LSU getting a huge win over the Florida Gators. How great is it? Like, remember at the beginning of the year when everybody was talking about the fact that LSU hadn't won a road game in almost a year? And now they won nine straight on the road in conference play. That is nothing short of impressive.
You're absolutely, positively spot on that. There's no question. I attribute it to a lot of things. They've got really, really good guard play. Really good guard play. One of the best offensive rebounding teams I've seen in many, many a moon. They knock down free throws. They get steals. They defend. They just are a good team. And the other thing is they're a very close team. Don't ever underestimate the loss of Wade Sims and how it galvanized this team. You hate to lose someone, but he's looking down, and I swear he's had some divine intervention with this team sometimes during the course of this season. But it is remarkable to go through the season unscathed on the road in league play. That is so, 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 so very hard to do. So few teams have. This team has.
And I feel like it's that much harder, Jordy, when you consider the fact there's just been such a black cloud hanging over the program over the last few weeks, man. It's just, especially now, 24 hours later, we wind up finding out more news about Will Wade and all the reports coming out from Yahoo Sports. It just feels even more special, the fact you were able to do that with all the noise that's going on around LSU at this point.
You know, on a fractured team, it would tear them apart even more so. But on a tight-knit team like this one is, it just gives them that old cliche of us against the world. And that's exactly how they feel right now. It's us against the world. And that's the creed that they take on the road. And that's how they'll finish out this season. And it will be, you know, all this other stuff off the court, the noise will take care of itself. All these young men have to do is take care of their business on the court. And so far, so, so good.
It's great to hear, Jordy. Now we got to move over to the NBA, because last night we had big, big history made with LeBron James passing Michael Jordan on the all-time scoring list. Man, it's crazy to think all the records that LeBron James has already broken. But Jordy, I gotta ask you: do you think there's a chance LeBron James could pass up one Kareem Abdul-Jabbar?
Wow, if he stays healthy, he's about 6,000 plus points away from that. If he averages his current clip, he can do it in about 3 years. So I don't see why not. I really think there are some things. He's never going to catch Michael Jordan and the championships that he's got.
Nope.
I think he wants to be on the cover of Sports Illustrated more than Michael Jordan ever was. And I think he wants to go down as the all-time leading scorer. I think those are the things that are driving him now more so than anything, the end of the personal goals rather than – I'm sure the team goals are still important, yeah. But I really think that's what he wants. I really do.
I mean, he already brought a championship back to Cleveland. So, honestly, yep. Like that's one more thing checked off the list. I mean, if he doesn't get another championship in Los Angeles, I have to agree. I think he wants to become the all-time leading scorer in the NBA, at least as of right now. Obviously, I think James Harden definitely could – make a strong case for that in a few years as long as he stays healthy, because the dude just shoots it like crazy.
He's got a long way to go to get to those numbers, but he does shoot it a lot. He does shoot it often, and he's pretty darn accurate, but he's got a long way to go.
But it helps that he's young, Jordy.
Yeah, true.
All right, Jordy.
I got to admit, I never saw that coming out of college in James Harden.
I don't think anybody did, honestly, Jordy.
I'm with you. Next.
All right, Jordy, moving over to LSU football. Big news coming out of the beginning of spring football, coming out from LSU football itself about who's wearing number 7 in 2019.
And easy.
I think that this was kind of a surprise, but it makes sense, though, Jordy. Grant Delpit rocking the number 7, definitely establishing
easy.
A legacy. And I think it's an easy decision considering the fact yeah. that last year you kind of whiffed on that in a big way with Jonathan Giles. It's safe to say that that the legacy of number 7 will be restored with the guy like Grant Delpit, right?
No offense to Jonathan Giles, but was that the most overhyped nothing ever? I mean, golly. Grant Delpit, easy choice, easy solution. Patrick Peterson, Tyrann Mathieu, there's a vibe there, no question. Grant Delpit, an All-American last year, came out of nowhere and just balled like crazy. Easy choice for him. Who gets number 18? I don't know. I have no clue.
I have to. It feels like it makes sense, though, now that I'm really thinking about it, Jordy, to put Grant Delpit in that spotlight. The guy's going to wind up doing some good things.
Maybe Joe Burrow changes number and goes to number 18 like the person that started this whole thing, Matt Mock, back in the day.
I don't see why not.
Maybe Joe Burrow is a leading candidate for number 18.
He should be, Jordy. I mean, the guy has been that leader from the second he stepped on campus last year. Dude, he was just phenomenal.
You heard it.
Yeah,
we agree. We're saying it right here, right now. I bet you that's who's got it.
All right, we're going to save that tape for future reference, Jordy.
All right, please do.
All right, now we're going to move over to some news concerning Monday Night Football, Jordy.
Uh-oh.
Bye-bye, Boogermobile? Rumors are coming out, Jordy. The Boogermobile could be going the way of the Dodo Bird, scrapping the sideline crane that Booger McFarland sat atop most of last season. It's got to make you think, Jordy, Booger McFarland getting the call up to the booth instead of hiring somebody else?
I think a 3-man booth will be evident. I'm a big fan of Booger, a friend of the program. I was not a big fan of the sideline seat and camera. Yeah. I don't think he was a big fan of it either. I think it would be great to have Booger up in the booth and get one more person in there, and you got a defensive mind, get an offensive mind, and you get the Tessitore kind of directing the ship in the right direction. I think that would be terrific. I hope that's the case, because I'm all about LSU guys showing that, hey, we're pretty special down here.
All right, Jordy, last one. A little bit more lighthearted, because I feel like this is just awesome stuff. Because it's National Cereal Day, Jordy. So it got me thinking, what's a Mount Rushmore of cereal in your mind?
Wow. Man. Not a big cereal guy, but Rice Krispies has to be in there.
Okay.
Frosted Flakes has to be in there. I'm a big, what's the one with, Name some of them for me. Let me think. Give me your four.
I'd probably wind up going Lucky Charms as my top.
That's
one.
Mine. That's my favorite one. Thank you.
Yes,
that is my favorite. Okay, go ahead.
We got to go Fruit Loops as well, Jordy. Can't go wrong with that.
Fruit Loops, yeah.
And then we, I guess, Cinnamon Toast Crunch. I think is always going to be a strong one.
That's my kid's favorite.
And then yep. I'm going to go a little bit of a different route here, Jordy. Kix. You remember that back in the day, the Kix cereal?
I do remember
that. It
was
K-I-X.
Wow.
That was some good stuff, too. Don't get me wrong.
Wow. Okay, well, all right. I'm going to do Frosted Flakes, Cinnamon Toast Crunch, Lucky Charms, and I like Fruit Loops, too. Yeah. Sorry, I was never a big Rice Krispies fan, so,
so
I'm going to go with those four.
I like that.
National Cereal Day. Now you got me hungry. I got to go to the store. I'm going to buy all four boxes. And watch hoops over the weekend. Yes.
Perfect way to spend a weekend, Jordy.
Hey, my boy Danny Broussard's got St. Thomas More in the state championship game again, but he's going up against my alma mater again in De La Salle. I mean, I sent him a congratulatory note, but I'm sorry, man. I got to go with the alma mater. I got to. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. We'll talk about that a little bit more tomorrow,
yeah.
Jordy.
Marsh Madness. Yep. Can we pick high school games? Is that against the rules?
As long as we don't put money on, I think we're okay.
Yeah, well, we don't put money on anything here. We're too cheap. All right, there you go. There's our hot topics for the day. Brought to you by Cajun Chef, the best hot sauce on the planet every day. Right there in St. Martinville for nearly 90 years, the Biard family just producing quality over quality over quality. Bring a small bottle of Cajun Chef hot sauce with you wherever you go. I'm telling you, everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. More LSU basketball talk. My man, the All-American, Rudy Macklin, next.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Well, LSU basketball wrapped up a perfect road record in SEC play. I had to call my main man, the all-time leading rebounder in LSU basketball history, second leading scorer, my good friend, my teammate, Durand Rudy Macklin. Mac, how about them Tigers, big guy? How are you?
Oh, man, they big time, man. Doing good.
I know you love this team for one reason. Man, they crash that offensive glass. They go to the boards, man.
Isn't that a beautiful thing? I love it. I told him there's a lot of points on that board. A lot of points on that offensive glass.
I mean, overtime win after overtime win, it's just remarkable how, I mean, you got to be a close-knit team to be able to handle those circumstances.
The thing is about it, though, Jordy, LSU is so much talented than all of these teams, but they still playing close games, and they got to learn how to get that killer instinct and put those guys away. Because Florida, man for man, they can't match up with LSU. Talent-wise, they're not even close. You know, but LSU managed to let them hang around, and then all of a sudden they wake up and say, okay, let's go. And they go get it done.
You like that Emmett Williams, don't you?
Oh, yeah. He's my kind of guy. You know, he's a hard worker, man. He's a blue collar type worker, hard ass guy. You know, you can always, he knows his role though, Jordy.
Yeah.
And he sticks with his role, and that's the best part of him. They all do a good job of maintaining in their lane. They stay in their roles. And that's the mark of a good team.
No question. Rudy Macklin, kind enough to join us, LSU, with a 1-point win in overtime. They're 25-5 overall, 15-2 in the SEC with Vanderbilt waiting to come to town on a Saturday night for the last regular season game. So many people ask me, so I'll ask you. It's a different time period, granted. No 3-point line back when we played, no shot clock back when we played. They have it now. What everybody asks me about comparisons to this team and that 1980-81 team, and I always tell people, look, that 80-81 team, that was a veteran club, man. That wasn't the first time they ever went to the NCAA tournament, man. We cut our teeth a couple years before that. There was a lot of experience in that tournament atmosphere. none of these guys have played in an NCAA tournament. So I just say wait and let's see how they handle that pressure cooker, right?
Yeah, well, and also, Joy, the talent level in the SEC back then and now, the SEC, there's only three teams right now, LSU, Tennessee, and Kentucky. The yeah. rest of the teams, they don't have the talent LSU has or any of those other teams has. Those SEC teams, they're rebuilding. If you go team by team, when you get past the three top dogs, all the other schools are rebuilding, all right? And they don't have the talent. Back when we played, the talent level was so spread out and balanced. I mean, because the bottom of the SEC was just as tough as the top. You had to play hard every night, you know? And so, but I'm not going to take it away from them. It's a great thing they're doing. I love it. It's just that it's a different era. Plus, the team before we played, that year before, when I broke my foot, that 79 team, that was the better team.
Yeah. I'm with you.
Yeah, when you played, and Dwayne Scales, Al Green, Lionel Green was a senior, and all of that was the better team. Yeah, so you never know.
Yeah, you don't. Why'd you break your foot, man? What's wrong with you, man? Why'd you do that to us?
You know, man, it was the second game. I think it was going to the third game in the season. We was about to play Oral Roberts.
Yeah,
and we were doing a rebound drill, doing a shoot around. And I went up to get the rebound to throw out the outlet pass to Ethan. And I came down on the side of my the shoe kind of cracked. It was one of those cheap Converse shoes. The shoe kind of cracked. It's like Zion Williamson, but it happened to
yes.
him. Well,
yes.
Same thing happened to me when I broke my foot. And we didn't think it was broke at first until we x-rayed it. And they said, you got a fifth metatarsal. I'm like, break. I'm like, oh, no. And I was in a cast. And that's when I'm going to go ahead on the red shirt.
Yeah.
But that team right there, you know, that was a heck of a team, man. My God.
Practices were brutal. Practices were brutal.
What would you... Coach Brown...
Go ahead.
You know, Coach Brown, he's breaking up fights all the time in practice. We went after it.
Rudy Macklin sharing some stories here and there. That was a tournament-tested club. Went up against Magic Johnson in Michigan State. We went up against Daryl Griffith in Louisville, Missouri, and Alcorn State, and some of these other teams that were really, really, really good ball clubs. And then that special season when, you know, all the stars aligned and we had the Elite Eight in the Superdome and you took on Arkansas and then Wichita State and then we all got silly in Philly, right? I mean, that was a tournament-tested club.
Yeah, and it was all because of the talent that we played against in the SEC. The SEC prepared us for that. But this SEC conference now, the talent is not that. If Florida had a better team, there was no way LSU could have come back and won that game. Okay? Because Florida was making some crazy mistakes, and they didn't have man for man. They couldn't match with anybody at LSU at all. All right? We're going to see now how good they are. When you get in that tournament, you're going to go up against some mid-majors, Jordy, that can play.
Yes.
All right? You got to get past those mid-majors.
Yep.
Then you got to get to the big Division I. All right, because those mid-majors, man, like Murray State, Western Kentucky, and people like that, they're gonna come to play. And so we'll see what they're made of. I hope they can hang. I'm pulling for my boys, but it's about to get really real after that SEC tournament.
You're right about that, Rudy Macklin, kind enough to join us. I just think of the matchup. Look, this is a really good offensive rebounding team, but man. They got you and Greg Cook, may you rest in peace, although only 6'9", and you were 6'7". Naz Reid, Cavell Bigby-Williams, much taller. But, guy, you guys blocked out, man. Nobody got offensive rebounds against LSU back then. That was a taboo. That just wasn't going to happen. This team gives up a lot of offensive rebounds. They got to get better on that.
Yeah, we won all of our defensive rebounding battles. You know, yeah. Even though I specialize in offensive rebounding, defensive rebounding was where we were strong.
Yes.
And we weren't overly big, but we created space. We had strong legs, and we had good timing. And we just would not tolerate a team coming in getting offensive rebounders against us. That just wouldn't happen. And yeah. So we just had that attitude. We wanted to win every rebound battle. You win the rebounding battle, chances are you're going to win the game.
Yeah, I think of that. You know, I'm looking at the matchups. All right, so Tremont Waters will be up against Ethan Martin. Man, what I'd love to see that. Skylar May is going up against Howard Carter. Dude, come on.
Oh. No, Willie Sims. they don't have anybody can guard Willie Sims, okay?
I mean, you know, Leonard Mitchell and some of those guys going up against Emmett Williams. I guess you would be assigned to Naz Reid and vice versa. Man, I love your quickness against that. I just do. And Cook, I think poor Cavell Bigby Williams, he might be talked out of his game by Cook. You know that.
No, you know, Cook would guard Naz Reid, and he'll put Leonard Mitchell on Bigby Williams because Bigby Williams is not really an overly offensive threat.
Okay.
But
okay.
Naz Reid's an offensive threat. You put Cookie Man on Naz Reid.
So you got Marlon Taylor.
Marlon Taylor, he's a defensive. They would probably try to put him on me.
Yeah.
Because of my quickness, that would be a mistake.
Rudy Mack, you're the best. You're the best. That would be a mistake. I got to agree with the old left-hander.
I dream of having matchups with people my height. Okay, if he was bigger than me, you know, and I have no trouble. You know, like Bobby Knight threw a curve on us and put 6'10" Landon Turner on me.
Landon
that
Turner.
Threw me off. That threw me off. But you get to put a guy on me my height, oh, I got you.
Uh-oh.
I got you.
It's over. Rudy Mack, you're the best. Give me that 80-81 team. I'll take them every day of the week and twice on Sunday. But we hope these Tigers, we hope they go a long, long way. Buddy, always fun talking to you, man. We'll talk to you soon. Rudy Macklin here on the Jordy Helpert Show. Time out. Back with more after this.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
All things NFL next here on the Jordy Hultberg Show with the editor of Shutdown Corner for Yahoo Sports, Mr. Frank Schwab. Schwab, how are you, sir? How's everything?
Doing well. What's new?
Well, we got past the NFL Combine, and now we're just kind of waiting to see where some of these Pittsburgh Steelers go and what's going to happen in the draft. And is the market shrinking for Antonio Brown? It just seems like, you know, you hear there's a trade imminent, but are the Steelers really in a great position when it comes to trading Antonio Brown now?
I don't know. I'm so confused as to, you know, are these things being leaked this week that say there's going to be a trade by the end of the week? Is that the Steelers just putting the screws to somebody and hoping for a better deal? Are they willing to take whatever deal's on the table? Are they really having multiple suitors now? Because, you know, I read stuff like, you know, oh, three teams have just jumped in the mix. And I kind of roll my eyes at that. It's kind of the way I feel about the old baseball thing where it's always mystery team, like, oh, there's a mystery team for Manny Machado. There never is. I mean, it's just an agent trying to drum up some, you know, some sort of a market. So I don't know. I once the, you know, all these reports come out that the Steelers are going to make a trade by Friday, they almost have to, right? It's going to be weird if we get to Saturday and there's no deal. We're going to be saying, what's wrong with Steelers? Why hasn't there been a trade? I think that whoever's been leaking this had a reason for it anyway. So, I don't know. I guess there's going to be a trade. I wonder if Steelers fans are going to be happy with it. I don't think they're going to get exactly what they think they're going to get out of this. I think that they're going to get somewhat of a high pick, whether it's maybe the Raiders' high second-round pick or a low first-round pick, and then maybe some other cosmetic things to make the deal, you know, look good for, like, swapping swapping fourths or thirds next year, whatever it's going to be. But I don't think it's just like, hey, we got two first-round picks for our Hall of Fame receiver. That ain't happening. So yeah, it'll be very interesting to see what happens here in the next 36 hours or so.
Why wouldn't, if you're the new head coach of a team with arguably the best quarterback in football up in Green Bay, why wouldn't you try and go get that guy to so that quarterback could throw to Antonio Brown? Isn't that what Aaron Rodgers is missing, that go-to receiver?
Yeah, there's a few teams that it just makes sense. And I know Antonio Brown comes with some baggage, but he's also, you know, maybe the best receiver in this generation, too. So if you're the Packers, if you're the Saints, I think the Saints fit really,
yes,
really well. Although I don't
Thank
know
you.
That they necessarily have the cap room. Hey, I mean, the Saints were all in last year for the pass rusher in the first round. Why not trade another first round pick? I mean, next year's first round pick. I mean, why not? At this point, you're all in anyway. You know, if you can get Michael Thomas and Antonio Brown on the same offense, you'd have something cooking, wouldn't you? So, the Saints make sense to me. The Titans make sense to me. There's a few teams where you look, and the Cowboys make sense to me. There's a few teams where you look and you say, you know, why not? If you feel like you're pretty close and you need one really, really good piece to push you over, I think Antonio Brown's a perfect move because he's not that expensive. Yes, a first-round pick is tough to swallow, but you're getting at least 2 or 3 years of prime play out of a Hall of Fame guy. That's nothing to scoff at. And, you know, I don't see, like, you know, the Raiders pop up in these trade talks. That makes no sense to me at all. Why would the Raiders, with the worst roster in the NFL, why would they be getting a 31-year-old receiver and trading valuable picks for him? That I don't get. Yeah. But if your team, again, Packers, Saints, Titans, maybe the 49ers can talk themselves into being defenders, the Seahawks, another team that could use a receiver. You know, teams like that who kind of feel like, hey, Antonio Brown could make us Super Bowl contenders, I'm all for it. I think it'd be a good move. But, you know, we'll see. I just kind of think there's going to – I really do think that all these things have been leaked. I've been talking about Antonio Brown now 5 minutes to you, but I really do think that all these things have been leaked to kind of put the pressure on the Raiders because I think they're going to keep bidding at this point.
We haven't talked about this, but I've been preaching from the mountaintop about the Saints. I mean, why wouldn't he want to go play for one of the most accurate passers in the history of the game, with a guy who spreads the ball around? And why wouldn't the Saints want it? Because, you're on the tail end. It's all chips in now. I mean, you're that close. And why wouldn't you give Breeze another option to go to? It just makes perfect sense to me if the dollars and cents fit. And I'm sure they could figure that out along the way. But anyway, that's another story. Le'Veon Bell, which teams you think are to go after him or when the market opens next week?
You know, I'm very interested in this because I think Le'Veon Bell is the best player available in free agency. If you're just stripping away the value of the positions and all that kind of stuff. But he's not going to get paid more than Nick Foles, more than Trey Flowers even. I don't think Trey Flowers is going to the Hall of Fame any day. I think Le'Veon Bell might because he ends up having a few more good years. But where's the running back market at? I don't know. And you know what? I think it's a little bit of a stretch to make this comparison, but what happened with Todd Gurley at the end of last season, I think that doesn't help Le'Veon Bell. I think the team's looking, they say, wow, the Rams gave all this money to Todd Gurley, and by the end of the season, they're splitting time with C.J. Anderson? Do we want to go down that road? Do we want to give Le'Veon Bell $14 million a year,
point.
Or $18 million, whatever he's going to ask for? So I don't think that helps. It's just a reminder that the running backs are very tenuous. They seem to grow on trees sometimes you're not going to get a Le'Veon Bell in the fifth round, but you're perfectly capable. Marlon Mack in the fifth round, you know? So I don't know. Teams, I thought – Mike, you know, the Colts have more money than they know what to do with in free agency, but they seem pretty happy at running back. And the Jets seem to be batting off a little bit. And the Tampa Bay Buccaneers don't have the money for it. And you start to really look and say, who's going to sign Antonio or who's going to sign Le'Veon Bell? And it's really hard to find a great fit. I'm not sure. Maybe the Ravens are the best fit. They do have a ton of money. They could definitely use him. It'd be kind of tweaking the Steelers to get him get him from a division rival. So maybe it's the Ravens. But I'm really interested to see when he gets paid because I think we're going to look up and say Le'Veon Bell's the best player in free agency, and he only got this much. That's what he held out for. I just don't think the market's there for him.
I'm with you. Frank Schwab, the editor of Shutdown Corner for Yahoo Sports. I think it's an incredibly intriguing draft because of who's picking number one and what the coach, Cliff Kingsbury, had to say. And now we know about the quarterback, his size, his height, his hands, all that. If you had to put a Diet Coke or whatever your beverage of choice is on this thing, do the Cards get rid of Josh Rosen, take Kyler Murray? Do they trade out of number one? What would be your best guess scenario?
You know, I think at this time there's been so much smoke that I think it is Kyler Murray. I don't know if that's necessarily their right move, but I do agree with this. If you think, you know, Cliff Kingsbury is our guy, we're going to give him every chance to succeed, and we think Kyler Murray is special. We think that in this offense he can be an MVP type of guy, Pro Bowl, whatever, you know, whatever bar you want to set for him, then fine. The quarterback is so important in the NFL. If you basically just say, look, Josh Rosen's good, but he's not as good as Kyler Murray. We think Kyler Murray has a special talent that Josh Rosen just doesn't have, and we have a chance to get Kyler Murray, then you do it. Then the quarterback's that important, and you just kind of just take the loss on the investment you made on Josh Rosen, you trade him for whatever you can get for him, and you move on with Kyler Murray. And you look, I mean, I it's a little crazy to draft somebody 10th overall, give him 1 year on a bad offense, and then cut bait. But, again, quarterback's so important. A big problem with drafting a quarterback in the top 10 is it's an opportunity cost elsewhere, because no team that in recent memory that I can think of, maybe you have an example from majority, but I don't have one, of a team drafting somebody in, let's say, the top half of the first round, there's just no turning back at that point. That's every team that's done it, that's a 3-4 minimum year investment.
Yes.
And you may have chances to draft other guys, but you say, well, we got our guy. We have Sam Bradford back in the day, or whoever it is, Christian Ponder, or whatever. And you just pass on all these guys. I think the Cardinals kind of break the mold with that and just saying, we don't care if we drafted Josh Rosen last year. We think Kyler Murray's just that good where we can draft him right now. Now, are they playing this game just perfectly and setting this all up to get 3 first-round picks out of the Oakland Raiders to move up to number one so they can draft Kyler Murray? Yeah, maybe. I'd be pretty impressed. I'd tip my cap if that's what's happening. Because they have done a heck of a job snowing everybody under them, because everybody seems to think they're drafting Kyler Murray. But I really believe it's true. I just think they look at it as, we got a coach. We think this guy fits the system perfectly. We think he has a special talent that Josh Rosen maybe just doesn't have. We're going to upgrade from a serviceable guy to a guy we think can someday, you know, maybe be a top 5 quarterback in the league. And I'm fine with that. I get all the reasons why.
Yeah. Frank Schwab, editor, Shutdown Corner for Yahoo Sports. So if that is the case, what does a Josh Rosen command? I mean, he's young. He's a quarterback. What does he command from a trade value to Arizona?
Yeah, and I don't think it's going to be much. It's going to be fine. I mean, but they're not recouping the 10th pick of the draft. Let's put it that way, because a few things. Josh Rosen struggled last year, and we can have all the excuses in the world we want for him, and some of them are very legitimate. But the fact is, he played 1 year in the NFL and he didn't play well. So right then, you're going to say, well, maybe he's not as good as we thought, and that drops his value down. And also, a big part of the value of quarterbacks and rookie quarterbacks in the NFL, young quarterbacks in the NFL, is they're on a rookie deal. And now Josh Rosen's a year down the road. I mean, you don't get 5 years out of this cheap rookie deal with Josh Rosen. You get 4. It's pretty significant, too. So they're not getting the 10th pick back. That's not going to happen. If they get a bidding war going, maybe a second rounder. I'm more thinking maybe a third. When we talk about I've been beating this drum forever with you, with everybody else I talk to, writing it. The quarterback market in the NFL has changed pretty significantly in that most teams have a guy. There's not a team out there. You know, if this was 5, 6, 10 years ago, there would be 3, 4 teams that are like, oh my goodness, we have no quarterback whatsoever and we can get Josh Rosen. We got to pay. We got to give him a first. Every team in the NFL, aside from Jacksonville, who's going to get Nick Foles, or Miami, who seems to be tanking for next year's draft, or maybe Washington, but, you know, they kind of have a lot invested in Alex Smith already. Every team in the NFL, go down the list and try to figure out where who's going to be giving up a lot for Josh Rosen? They can all talk themselves into their guy already. They either have a veteran or a young guy or somebody else. And it's just there's not many teams who are like, oh, my God, we'll break the bank for Josh Rosen. So I don't know where he lands up. But the team that interests me most in this all is the Chargers because I think he play well in L.A. I think they have to get somebody to groom behind Phillip Rivers. Yeah. And you'd have him for a couple more years pretty cheap as your backup to Rivers while he gets groomed. I think that fit makes the most sense for me.
I was going to suggest the Saints are very similar. I don't know how long Drew Brees is going to play, but do you take a Rosen or do you try to keep a Bridgewater? I mean, what
I
do you
know.
Do?
It depends. Yeah, it depends what you think of both guys. I probably prefer Teddy at this point, but he's probably going to cost you a little more. But Teddy's interesting. Teddy's the example I always bring up when I'm talking about the kind of quarterback market in the NFL, and everybody just trots out the old tired, oh, the quarterback's terrible in the NFL, a million teams need a quarterback, when they don't think critically of it. But I always use the example of Teddy Bridgewater. Let's say you're Teddy's agent, and you're going out there with dreams of after last preseason, you're going to get a Case Keenum $18 million a year contract. Tell me who he signs with. Tell me which team is out there who hasn't talked themselves into a young guy or doesn't have someone lined up or already has a guy like a Roethlisberger, Rivers, Brees, whatever, at Rodgers. You know, I mean – there's just not many teams out there that are going to give Teddy Bridgewater $18 million a year. The Broncos traded for Flacco, and again, the Dolphins seem to want to tank, and the Redskins just paid Alex Smith $84 million last year, and you're just crossing teams off the list, off the list, off the list, and the Giants have Eli, so they're not going to pay Teddy Bridgewater $18 million a year. So you get to that point when you say, I think Teddy's going to come back to the Saints, and I think he's going to come back at a price that we probably didn't anticipate when they made that trade last August, and they're going to look pretty smart for the New Orleans Saints. If that happens, I don't know. We'll see. It only takes one team to get crazy.
That's
maybe Miami's laying in the weeds, and he's a Miami guy, so maybe he wants to go back there. But I kind of see this ending up as, Teddy ends up back in New Orleans, maybe on a shorter deal so he can renegotiate after Drew retires. But, I think if you're the Saints, you're feeling pretty good about retaining Teddy Bridgewater at this point.
What I'm amazed by? There's a lot of really good quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if they of one good backup quarterback. Why are the backup quarterbacks so bad in the NFL? It's like you lose your starting quarterback and your season's over. It's done. It's done for the most part.
It's tough. I think that maybe that's going to improve a little bit. You're going to see guys like Ryan Tannehill, Case Keenum, Teddy Bridgewater. These guys are going to be backups next year. You know, they're not that bad a quarterback. So I think you're seeing just we're in a golden age of quarterback. And I know everybody disagrees with that because it's been beaten into our conscience that – the quarterbacks should play so terrible. It's not. It's really good, actually, right now.
Yeah,
so
I agree.
I think the next step is getting those good backups, getting to the point where we have more than a handful. Like, we've seen the value of it. If you have a Nick Foles, if you're the Eagles or, guys like that, it's gold. And it's just hard. It's really, really hard in the NFL to get two good quarterbacks. I mean, but we're seeing them. We're seeing them develop and we'll get to a point where, maybe 10 teams have good backups and they're all going to be in demand. And that's why, when teams pay pretty significant draft costs for Teddy Bridgewater or pay a decent contract. Watch Tyrod Taylor's going to get a pretty good contract this offseason, I think, because he's a guy you could put into a game and feel pretty good about. But he's going to cost because these guys are, they're not dime a dozen. They're tough to come by, and if you have a good backup quarterback, that could be really valuable to you.
He is Frank Schwab, the editor of Shutdown Corner for Yahoo Sports. Always fun talking with you, my friend. Have a great rest of your week and enjoy the weekend, man. Thank you so much.
Yep, no doubt.
All right, that's the Schwab. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back with more. This is the Jordy Helfberg Show, but we'll be right back. All right, welcome back. 53 minutes after the hour, all kind of things breaking loose here. The story of Will Wade and the Yahoo Sports has been updated with additional details from an ESPN report stated that another call between Will Wade and Christian Dawkins, Wade joked that the player, believed to be Javonte Smart, would be compensated more than the rookie minimum. Man, that just, come on, guys. That's just not good. Does not sound good. But we will wait. We will see. As we said earlier, unanimous All-American will wear the number 7 jersey for LSU for his final campaign next season. Baseball news. LSU will host Cal this weekend for the final series of non-conference play, which means Palminteri has one more look-see to see what's going to happen with his pitching. One change of note, Cole Henry is replacing Landon Marceau as LSU's Saturday starter for this weekend series against Cal. Palminteri alerted the media to that just a short while ago. Other changes? We'll have to wait and see what happens along those lines. Marceau roughed up a little bit in his start against Texas. He will pitch out of the bullpen Friday night. He'll start next Tuesday at Northwestern State. According to Palminteri, number one, I wanted to give Cole Henry a start. Landon's going to be a great pitcher for us, and I'm certainly not giving up on him. He very well could be back in the weekend rotation against Kentucky, but he needs another experience of pitching on the road in a hostile environment. So, okay, that's good. No problem with that. So much more on the LSU series with Cal to come. But history lesson time, as we do, as we wrap up this edition. March 7th, 1982, the NCAA tournament selection was televised live for the very first time back in 1982. And the season ended up on March 29th in the Louisiana Superdome with the North Carolina Tar Heels against the Georgetown Hoyas. Patrick Ewing and the Hoyas had a lead, and then Michael Jordan took the shot with about 15 seconds to go, but put the Tar Heels ahead and to win Dean Smith his first national championship. On this day, March 7th, 1982. If it's your birthday today, happy birthday from all of us to all of you. Hope you have a great day. You share your day with the likes of Bryan Cranston. Happy 62nd birthday. A tremendous job in the movie Upside. If you haven't seen it with Kevin Hart, highly recommend going to see that flick. It is that good. Wanda Sykes is 54 years old today. So, special thanks on a busy day, Cody Worsham, Rudy Macklin talking LSU basketball, Brooks Cabina talking LSU spring football, which gets underway. It's underway as we speak. They'll meet with the media at around 4:30, or they'll let the media in around 4:30 this afternoon. And then the Schwab, I told you, Antonio Brown to the Saints. It just makes perfect sense. Pull the proverbial trigger. Get my man number 9 some more help. And let's go win us a Super Bowl one decade after the first and only Super Bowl you won. Let's do it. Your locker room can handle Antonio Brown. All he wants is the rock, and nobody throws it better or more accurately than Drew Brees. CD, thank you for all the work that you do. Thanks to all of you for listening. To our partners that make it possible, thank you, thank you, thank you. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4, same great station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. Until then, I'm Jordy Helfberg. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.